Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Washington dysfunction leaves agriculture in limbo. A new farm bill was due last year, now it may not be done until next year. We'll talk about the concerns over kicking this critical can down the road even further. Also this morning, what do you want to be when you grow up? We ask youngsters that question all the time, and next month, Raise the Bar Hancock County will give middle school students the chance to truly consider and explore many of their options. And happy fall, y'all! We have practical advice for pet owners on taking your dog along on your next autumn road trip adventure. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, September 23rd, 2024. We have reached a milestone now, 99 days remaining in the year, fewer than 100 days until 2025. So 99 days remaining in the year. Was good to get some rain yesterday. Yesterday afternoon and yesterday evening, some showers moved through. A couple of pretty good downpours where we were. I don't know about where you are. I don't know that it was enough to break the extraordinarily dry conditions that we have had across the state of Ohio for the past couple, 3 weeks. It's been exceedingly dry, and Ohioans being asked to conserve water. Now, despite, you know, few showers yesterday, we're not quite out of the woods just yet. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources says that more than three quarters of the state is experiencing some severity of a drought, and to combat that, we are being asked to use our water wisely. For example, they say residents are urged to take shorter showers, only wash full loads of laundry, only water the lawn or landscaping if necessary. But, you know, I looked at that and I was, right about now, it's kind of necessary. Maybe not this morning because of the showers we got yesterday, but things are looking pretty dry, pretty bleak. The lawn and landscaping, but only water the lawn or landscaping if necessary, and try to fix any leaky faucets and or toilets in your home. So if you've been putting that off, they say now is the time to address that. Forecasters say we could see some more much needed rain this week, but for now, try and conserve where you can. So something to Here is good news, though, as we head into the hopefully cooler weather. COVID cases in Ohio are finally dropping. The latest report from the CDC finds the number of COVID cases in Ohio dropped from more than 10,000 new cases reported last week to just over 8,000 reported this week. And, of course, we're talking about this past week. So a couple of weeks ago, it was 10,000. Couple of weeks before, a week or two before that, it was up around 10,000. But now we've seen our first significant drop in cases that we have seen since a surge began in early June. So a little bit of good news there regarding COVID in Ohio. However, that being said, it's not like we don't have anything to worry about. Every single day, as you know, there has to be some doom and gloom story, something that we need to be worried about and or fearful of, and here is today's doom and gloom story. We may have fewer COVID cases, but high levels of a respiratory virus have been found in wastewater samples nationwide. This is the enterovirus D68, it says here, which has been associated with paralysis in some children, raising concerns of a possible rise in the U.S. because this virus has been found in wastewater samples nationwide. According to a new report, those with the highest risk of getting symptoms of D68 include infants, children, and teenagers. So basically, kids of almost any age. Let's see here. Dr. Alan Glatt, chief of infectious diseases at Mount Sinai South Nassau in Oceanside, New York, characterized this D68 disease or this respiratory virus as a rare but potentially very serious illness that can mimic the effects of polio and can cripple children. Health experts say the virus is spread through coughing, sneezing, and touching contaminated surfaces. So this is what we are worried about now, as if COVID wasn't enough. We got to have something. We passed the COVID critical stage, so we got to be worried about this now. This is the latest, D68. Don't cough or sneeze on anyone. Don't touch contaminated surfaces. How would you know if they were contaminated, though? With this virus. I don't know. Just don't touch anything. Don't touch anything! Stop touching things. Good luck telling your kids to stop touching things. Anyway. But that is the latest doom and gloom story. Or maybe it's this. This is a bit of a concern, apparently. Dog walking injuries have been on the rise. Your dog is trying to kill you. Dog walking injuries have been on the rise. And this, by the way, has been going on for the past 20 years, according to Johns Hopkins University researchers. It's been going on for 20 years. We're just now hearing about it now. Man's best friend, turns out maybe he's not. From 2001 to 2020, the number of adults visiting the ER for dog walking injuries has increased from 7,300 per year to over 32,000 per year. 75% of the patients who presented at the ER with a dog walking injury, 75% were women, and 47% were between the ages of 40 and 64. So if the way I read that, if you're a woman between the ages of 40 to 64, don't ever walk your dog again. I guess maybe that's an excuse to have your husband do it. You know, is, dear, I need you to walk the dog because I don't want to die. The lead researcher on this for Johns Hopkins, Ridge Maxson is his name, recommends using a non-retractable leash between 6 and 8 feet long. Why non-retractable leashes specifically? Because the retractable ones can sometimes make your dog more difficult to control. So, especially, I guess, for women between the ages of 40 and 64. Very critical stuff. Dog walking injuries. And on the rise. Who knew? Well, now you do. And I guess that is a good segue into this story that I saw among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. If you're going to die, what do you want to do first? According to a new survey, 95% of Americans have a bucket list. And you know the story of the bucket list. A list of those things that you want to do before you kick the bucket. 95% of Americans have a bucket list, and one third of us actually have, in fact, written it down. It's not just something we have in our head, it's something that we have actually written down. And they say, if you want to accomplish your goals, write them down. So if you don't have a written bucket list, maybe now is the time to do that. And so what do most people have on their bucket list? Well, they asked in this new survey, and 33% of Americans, I'm looking at the wrong data point. 33% have written it down. According to the poll, travel is big. More than 50% of those with a bucket list want to visit landmarks overseas. That was number one on the list. 43% want to visit landmarks in the U.S. So travel is very significant. Let's see here. For the record, residents in Wisconsin had the longest bucket list with nearly 25 items on the list on average. New Jersey, Maine, and Maryland all had 24 items or more that they want to accomplish before they kick the bucket. Those in Arkansas had the shortest bucket list with just over 13 items. So that's the other thing. If you have a bucket list, how many items do you have on your bucket list? I mean, there is no hard and fast rule about this, obviously. You can have as many items as you want. On average, Ohioans, I looked it up, Ohioans have 17 and two-thirds items on their bucket list. With the most common items in Ohio being visit specific landmarks in Europe. They just don't lump those together. So maybe it's the Eiffel Tower, or maybe it's the Buckingham Palace or the Big Ben in Rome. Maybe it's the Roman Colosseum, whatever. So specific landmarks in Europe overall, number one. Visit all 50 states is number two most popular in Ohio, among Ohioans. Visit all 50 states. Travel via train is popular on the list. Travel via train. I'm assuming on like Amtrak, not like hobo style. I'm assuming when they say travel by train, they don't mean just hop a boxcar. But that's what it says. Learn a new language is on the list. Visit specific North American landmarks. Again, they lump them all together, whether we're talking about, the Grand Canyon or, the Statue of Liberty or something in, Banff National Park in Canada, whatever it might happen to be. It's North American landmarks. Travel via cruise, to take a cruise, to write a book. That is on a lot of people's bucket lists in Ohio. To become a millionaire, which it seems to me like that should be something that everyone should be aspiring to. Not just kind of a dying wish, but, that would be a good thing to be. And it's something that you really have to work an entire lifetime on. But it's kind of interesting that is on the list. To build a house, which I thought was kind of interesting, is one of the more popular items for Ohioans. And retire early. Now, I guess if you become a millionaire and build your own house, you could retire early. So that would be, all of those seem to be tied together. But those are the top items on Ohioans' bucket list. And some of the other things, let's see here, getting a tattoo, hiking a specific trail, something like that. So some of the other, items that are quite popular in the U.S. And by the way, nationally, according to the survey, the average person has already checked off about 20% of the things that they listed on their bucket list. On average, we've already checked off 20% of the items on our bucket list. How does that compare with yours? And just throw that out there. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly cloudy today, a high in the lower 70s. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 60s. The Hancock County Solid Waste Management District says it'll be hosting its final free collection for Hancock County residents of household hazardous waste paint and other items this week. The collection event will be held on Tuesday from 1 to 6 at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. Officials point out the collection event is for residents only and materials will not be accepted from businesses, companies, or contractors. See a list of accepted items and get more information in the story on our website. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine wrote an editorial in the New York Times describing his lifelong connection to Springfield. In it, he talks about the city's long history of immigrants from all backgrounds and the positive impact Haitian migrants are having on the city's economy.
The governor also writing this: as a supporter of former President Donald Trump and Senator J.D. Vance, I am saddened by how they and others continue to repeat claims that lack evidence and disparage the legal migrants living in Springfield. This rhetoric hurts the city and its people, and it hurts those who have spent their lives there, end quote.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more in this story on our website. Two dozen volunteer teams participated in the United Way of Hancock County's Fall Days of Caring last week, completing nearly 30 projects, including one at Wilson Vance Intermediate in Findlay.
It's a great program. I'm glad that we are able to take advantage of it and work together to make the community better.
Judy Wasinski, music teacher at Wilson Vance, says some volunteers from Amazon stopped by and did some landscaping and painting. Learn more about Days of Caring in the story on our website. The city of Findlay is reminding residents of its yard sign regulations and that the city prohibits signs in the public right-of-way. The city says typically the right-of-way is located between the street and sidewalk, and if the right-of-way contains no sidewalk, then the right-of-way extends about 16 feet from the street pavement edge. The city says signs found in the right-of-way will be removed by the city and stored at 224 West Crawford Street for a period of 30 days. Get more details about the city's yard sign regulations in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, we're talking Washington dysfunction and its impact on the agriculture industry. Because a new farm bill, for some reason, this is now all of a sudden coming up again. A new farm bill that was due last year, now may not be done until next year, even though there are some rumblings about somehow getting it done yet before the end of this calendar year. Talk about the concerns kicking this critical can down the road even further. We are joined by our good friend Ed Lentz from the OSU Extension office this morning. And Ed, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
I always appreciate an optimist, Chris, because we hope they'll at least get one done next year, too.
You know, it's funny because I started hearing some of these stories about maybe getting a farm bill done by the end of the year. And I'm thinking it's a year and a half overdue, at least.
Yes, because 2018 is when the last one was passed.
Right. It was supposed to be done in
the last 5 years. So that expired. Right. And we've got these continuing resolutions.
Right.
It's the same as to keep food on the table, literally, maybe.
Right. Yeah. For some folks. And so I don't know that I'm necessarily optimistic we're going to see one by the end of this year. But the question then becomes, are we even going to see one next year?
And that's going to be our challenge, because just like the country is divided in the election process this year, we have that same division going on among our legislatures there concerning the farm bill. And of course, there's got to be a version passed in the House and a version passed in the Senate.
Yeah.
And since you don't have any party control on both of those,
right,
there's a challenge right there.
And I think that's one of the reasons why this is coming up, thinking maybe we can get this done before the end of the calendar year after the election, because I think the general consensus is that the election year politics are one of the things that's holding this up. Nobody wants to be overly committal in a presidential election year, not knowing how that might impact the presidential election.
Well, and besides that, it's over $1 billion, but when you got a $1 trillion deficit, what's a billion? And so in some ways, it's a smaller potato compared to other things.
But
because we can't even get our general funding for our budgets done.
Right. But when you get into those kind of numbers, obviously, and especially the farm bill, as most people know, this is incredibly far reaching. Everybody has their own priorities, their own wish lists of what they want to see in it. You get into numbers that big, that just means more and more people have their hands in the till.
Well, just an example of it, the actual money that's actually going to the farm economy or the farm industry, mm-hmm, of that farm bill is only 20%.
Yeah.
So that tells you right there, there's 80% of other fingers in that pot that has nothing to do with the farm operation and the farm industry. And,
right,
and of course, the biggest one is Supplemental Nutritional Agriculture Program, SNAP.
Right.
Is the biggest one. And there is that's probably also where the biggest disagreement comes in on the political parties, on how many strings do you put for people to be able to get those, get that assistance. How open do you let it to be? And of course, there's a wide divide between the two parties on what that should be.
And all of that is incredibly important. You talk about SNAP and the school lunch programs and all of those things. They're very important. So we don't want to discount that. But to the extent that the farm bill actually impacts farms and farmers and the agriculture industry in general, there's some pretty important stuff in there, too, that becomes, you just sort of in limbo at this point.
Well, the big two in there that people got to realize, it's the safety net for the commodities. Mm-hmm. It's the subsidy for crop insurance. That to get to be able to qualify for those safety nets, you have to have crop insurance.
Right.
And so those are the two big ones that directly goes to the farm. And that's where the farmers are concerned, because they're basically covered for this cropping year. But they're not necessarily knowing what the game's going to be for next year. And they got to start making decisions in December and January for the 2025 crop. And they kind of like to know where are they going to be as they're making those post plans.
And as you mentioned, it's not like there's no money for this. There is no provision for this. The current existing farm bill has been extended through what I think the end of this month. This is why this is all coming up again.
It basically ends this month. It ends this month. But they do have a continuance automatically. So critical things still will occur while they're messing around trying to decide what to do.
That being said, 2018, which is the last time you got a new farm bill, things were very different than they are in 2024. I mean, 2018, we're talking pre-pandemic. We're talking, you know, a lot of things have changed, you know, the pre all of this run up in prices in and everything else. So a lot has changed between then and now.
Well, that's what the farm community is saying. We really need it now. As projected and probably will occur, the farm income or economy is going to have a 23% drop in profitability. That's huge compared to what it was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the grain prices are back to 2020 levels. And one thing that's affecting the farming community, like everybody else, is inflation. All those input costs, they have not gone back down to the 2020 and 2019 level.
Right.
So their inputs are real high. Their income is down. And so, yes, they need to know that they've got some security there for the crop.
That being said, so, I mean, to hear you say that, you know, the impression that one could get is, oh, my goodness, this is critical. It is critical. But as you point out, it actually may turn out to be something of a blessing in disguise.
Well,
we had this delay.
Well, because we are in a recession, you might say, in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot better to go and ask for assistance when you really have a great need than when you're having a very prosperous time going and saying, hey, please help us out and continue.
So, in other words, if this had been done on time, perhaps whatever was decided then would not necessarily account for the situation now.
Correct. Because there's set yield goals, set yields and other things to come and play, and that's what they want, that ceiling changed on there, because the input costs, they're not projected to drop back down. And so that's to help that economy.
So it could be a good thing if it can get done, but in the meantime, something needs to be done, because you can't continue under the 2018 standards.
Correct. As we said, things have greatly changed. Input costs have gone up way, way more than what they were in 2018.
Yeah.
And the grain prices at best are back to where they were in 2018. So, yes.
So, I mentioned, you know, all of this Washington dysfunction has delayed the farm bill. And this is not the first time there's been a delay, but can you remember a time that it's been delayed this long?
Well, back in 2018, we ran into the same thing. It's just been a pattern.
I mean, it was like a year then.
It's that pattern in Congress of not doing getting their balanced budgets and having this fight continuing.
Yeah.
Agriculture is just another one of the collateral damage under the farm bill, along with all the other things.
Seems like this is an exceedingly long time to be delayed. I mean, like I said, we've seen delays before, but this is
pretty extreme. If it follows the pattern before, it took several years before we got the 2018 one. Well, that's why I said maybe you're being an optimist, hoping for 2025, because we're not there yet.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. You know, how optimistic are you that one even gets done next year? If it couldn't get done this year, now again, we're outside of the election, the presidential election window that throws a monkey wrench in everything that Washington does for an election year. It's one of the reasons why, you know, it's very difficult when the cycle comes up and matches an election year, but we're past that. But if they haven't got it done to this point, what's your best guess?
Well, I think the thing that also comes in play, Chris, you got to think who's on the committee, and does the party who's the majority changes? For example, the Michigan senator is the chair of the Senate committee. She's not running again, so you know, so it's a there's going to be openings there, and that person's been there a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have Senator Brown from Ohio is on the committee, but Debbie
he may or may not be back.
Yes, and Debbie Stepanowski has been on that committee for a long time. Mm. Same way in the House, the turnover. So besides hoping to, can we just get numbers together, you may have such a change in leadership that they're struggling. Who's going to lead? And someone's got to push this to happen, and you got to have strong congressional leaders to make that happen.
Which is likely not going to happen if you have first-time members of Congress. And any progress that may be made perhaps goes out the window and you start from scratch?
Well, I don't think we'll ever start from scratch. Government never goes back to scratch. We always build on what we had before, good or bad.
But in terms of any progress that has been made...
Oh, I think we will pretty well go back to the drawing. But if we don't get it done by the end of this year... They're going to go back to the drawing board and start over with new representations on the committees, potentially a new. Well, we are going to have a different president.
Yeah.
So it's going to be There's a lot of things in there that are going to come and play, and it takes leadership to make this happen. And as I've always said, people think, why do we put an emphasis on agriculture? To me, it's because it's the defense of our country. Mm-hmm. When a country can't feed itself,
right. You
have problems. And we saw that in a pandemic when we couldn't get certain things on the shelf, some of the panic and scramble we had.
Right.
So I think it's more than just agriculture.
Real quickly, we talk about the fact that this one bill encompasses the farm agriculture industry, but all of these other programs. There has been discussion in the past about splitting this into two separate things, and I think the general consensus is that actually is probably not a good idea.
It's probably not in the benefit of agriculture, because you only think about it, 2% of the voting population is in agriculture,
yeah,
even though 100% of the public benefit from it.
Right.
So if you look at votes and what districts are represented, if you don't have urban representatives supporting the farm bill, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's why we got the SNAP and other things in there, because right. that's something that the urban representation knows it's important too.
So ultimately, all of the problems that come up because this is such a huge bill, probably to split it would be one of those be careful what you ask for kind of thing.
I mean, it's kind of like a marriage arrangement. As any of us have been married, that there's always a compromise and there's goods and bads, and sometimes one partner may feel like they get something better than the other, but you got to have both for it to work.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask you about, we've only got about a minute or so left, but I wanted to ask you, that last week, the big Farm Science Review happened.
Great weather. There's been times, years I know we couldn't even do it. There's been times I'm down there almost with a winter coat on giving a presentation. But attendance was excellent, 108,000.
Wow.
Still, the field demonstrations are by far the biggest thing people want to see, the tillage, how to work with manure, other things. It's
a lot of new technology and science-related stuff.
Oh, there always is. And you can see it on the farm scale. That's why people want to come down and see those demonstrations.
Yeah. What was the big attraction this year?
Oh, it's always the tillage area. People always like, we say it, people like steel. It's kind of like people like automobiles. They like the sports car and that. So so they're over there where we're doing that and the harvesting equipment. A lot of that you can't afford. And it's a lot of it you're also seeing where things may go down in the future, how we're going to do
again,
things.
Again, kind of like the car shows.
That's exactly right.
The auto shows.
So you can dream, vision, and maybe someday I can afford that.
Yeah. But I would imagine the Farm Bill got a lot of conversation.
Well, we have a really good, there's a lot of farm stress. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty good exhibit down there on farm stress.
Yeah.
Also just the ag economy. So yes, the farm management booth was very busy.
Yeah. Again, Hancock County OSU Extension Educator Ed Lentz with us this morning talking about the farm bill, which again, the current extension expires the end of this month. We'll probably be kick that can down the road once again. But ultimately, eventually, you're going to have to deal with this.
Yes, we are.
Ed, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure.
So what do you want to be when you grow up? We ask youngsters that question all the time. Next month, the folks Raise the Bar Hancock County are going to give middle school students the chance to truly consider and explore many of their options. We are joined from Raise the Bar Hancock County by Tricia Valesque, Ashley Steppick. Big Blur, thanks very much for dropping by. Ladies, we appreciate it. Good to see you
good
once
again. Good to
see again.
You too, Chris. Thanks
okay, so this is Career Connections Day. Talk a little bit about what this is, and as we said, it's for middle school students, what they will be doing.
Yeah, so this is our first Career Connections Day. It's for our county eighth graders. We'll have 9 of our county districts there with over 800 students. So it's very exciting to have everyone involved this year. We have over 30 local businesses who will be there with 12 industries highlighted. So think of it as a career fair, but mm-hmm. even more immersive.
Yeah.
So we're really excited.
And geared toward young people. First of all, I guess we should kind of step back, and Tricia, maybe this is a good question for you. Talk a little bit about what Raise the Bar Hancock County is all about and how this event kind of fits into that mission.
Absolutely. We're a workforce development nonprofit. We're focused on making sure that people can excel in the workplace, which allows us to do different programs that support individuals with like career exposure and awareness, helping them find the paths to careers if they need credentials or college. Or straight to the workplace, and then also helping them with the short-term soft skill employability. So, mm-hmm. you know, this ties in really nicely because it allows us to give younger kids the chance to, for the first time, connect their career assessment results to a career fair so they go and meet the employers that align with where their aptitudes and interests are for right now. They're young, mm-hmm. but giving them that sense of like building connections early.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, how do you adapt that? Because, I mean, obviously you don't normally work with middle schoolers. You're talking about high schoolers and, mm-hmm. and up. So talk about adapting that for the middle school level.
We did this a little bit ago. It's been several years with a manufacturing day, which took mm-hmm. a whole week, and it was a pretty heavy lift for the employers to allow students in for a week.
Yeah.
So Ashley had a great opportunity to go just a little bit south from here and go do this kind of event somewhere else. And so that's where she brought this model in. But do you want to explain a little bit about what the worksheet and how they interact with the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of 6 out of 9 of our districts in our county do something called U-Science Assessment. So it's looking at their aptitudes and interests. So they have that background knowledge. Mm-hmm. They'll look at their results from their U-Science Assessment, and then they'll kind of gauge where their aptitudes and interests are going into Career Connections Day. Mm-hmm. They'll have a worksheet where they'll visit some of those industries and asks some pretty basic questions. What do you like about your job? What don't you like about your job? What kind of training or schooling do I need to work here? What kinds of jobs do you have available? Just to give them a roundabout idea of what that industry or what that business looks like.
I would imagine that in that assessment, you also, some of these students will uncover opportunities that maybe they hadn't considered before. Okay, this is something that I am interested in. You mean I could actually make a career out of that thing, whatever that thing may be?
Yeah, so I actually took it just for fun. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised with the results and how it aligned with, you know,
so
my interests already.
Are you in the right job?
I am.
Oh, okay.
But there were some surprises. I didn't know I could be an aeronautical engineer.
Well, there
Who
you
knew,
go.
Right?
There you go.
But it's really exciting for our students. I've been there when they've been taking it and getting their results. Mm-hmm. And just to see their faces light up and say, oh my gosh, to either be validated and say, I did want to be a teacher. And it says I would be really good at being a teacher. Mm-hmm. Or to say, oh, I didn't know that I was going to be so good at computers and technology. Like, mm-hmm. what else can I do with that besides maybe strictly IT? How can I merge education and careers or computers and technology mm-hmm. and kind of find pathways that way?
As just one example. Now, you mentioned that there are a number of different career paths to be highlighted mm-hmm. In the Career Connections Day. Such as?
Yeah, what? So as I said, we have 12, probably over 12 industries represented, but we have healthcare, education, computers and technology. We have energy,
government.
Public,
yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit of everything. And the point is each location will have balloons that signify which industry they're connected to. So the kids can even see that they might go visit one of our employers and there's four different career paths there. Mm-hmm. Because every business has maybe a marketing or finance or just the business salesy side. So they get to see, oh, I don't have to pick just one company because that's all they do.
Or, several companies will be looking for different things within one career umbrella.
Exactly.
Or one career umbrella would apply to several different things within a company.
Yep.
As well. Now, all of these are related to opportunities that would exist here in our own community?
Every employer who is visiting with us and sharing their time with our students is from Hancock County. And some of them have multiple booths because they are such a big employer in the community that they have a vast variety of careers. But we even have like the first responders, the fire trucks are coming, the police cars, the snow plows with ODOT. I mean, we've got a lot indoors and outdoors to keep the kids busy for the hour they're with us.
And again, that circles back to the mission of Raise the Bar Hancock County to be able to strengthen the workforce locally for the growth and expansion we are seeing within the community.
Exactly. The employers need to be, people need to be aware of what the employers are in our community and what they're probably doing, but let alone building talent over a long period of time to keep them here.
And to that extent, the response from the companies involved, I mean, again, this is one of the things that makes our community attractive to companies to locate or expand here.
People questioned how quickly we could pull together this event, and Ashley nailed it in a few months' time because all it takes is us reaching out and employers are willing. Mm-hmm. And that is attractive when you're trying to recruit new companies to this community because they want to get involved, but they also have to be a part of these different programs. And they find good success with that.
To know that their programs like this exist in the community.
They don't have to do it on their own.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to, a lot of times we think, oh, these are middle schoolers. They're not ready for a career yet. Mm-hmm. However, this is the upcoming workforce. So these businesses see the importance in that, and they want to make those connections too.
And also, yeah, they may be middle schoolers now, but it won't be very long before they're starting to decide what paths they want to take, classes in high school and so on. So you really need to start thinking in that direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is involving all of the schools in Hancock County?
Yes.
And this is happening when?
This is October 4th.
Okay.
We'll be at Owens Community College from 9 to 2.
Okay. And so this is part of the curriculum day for these schools, right?
It is. It's built into the day. Each school district gets a slot.
And the response from the schools, I mean, you talk about the response from the businesses and the local companies has been very strong. Response from the schools.
Yeah, and all of the schools belong to a business advisory council where this idea was floated for the first time. Mm-hmm. And all we have to do is ask, and they arrange for the transportation and the kids to come.
Terrific stuff. There is more information online about all of the work that Raise the Bar Hancock County does. The Career Connections Day, you said, is coming up on the 4th, right?
Yes.
So a couple of weeks away. If you have a middle schooler, expect that they will be talking about this here in the next couple of weeks. And I would imagine right after, you know, that's the other thing for parents to build on this after, the day after the next week. To sort of continue to ask questions and build on this.
Yeah, of course. Ask your student, you know, what did you do at school today on October 4th? If they're an eighth grader. And ask what businesses they visited and what they learned. They'll have a worksheet, so feel free to look at it and
you can
see what they have learned.
Start to build on that. Again, Tricia Valeska and Ashley Stepek-Bibler with us this morning from Raise the Bar Hancock County. Ladies, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You know that Sundays in Cleveland, in the Cleveland area, especially at sports bars and you know, taverns, that kind of thing, pubs, always exciting Sundays during football season in Cleveland. But the staff at one bar in Mentor, Ohio, who were already expecting a bustling Sunday crowd yesterday, got a little more excitement than what they had planned on when someone crashed their car into the front window of the place. This happened at Toth's place. Is it Toth's place or Toth's place? T-O-T-H, Toth. Toth's place. In Mentor, Ohio, reports say a customer had trouble with the brakes on their vehicle while trying to park and crashed into the front window. The window was shattered, but no one was hurt. I would imagine that the party continued, but it says here that the whole incident happened before the bar opened. Well, it's open now. It's open now. Yeah, a little trouble with the brakes. A little more excitement than they bargained for there before the Browns game yesterday. A couple of other items here in the broken news. The odd and unusual side of the headlines. A Florida man was arrested the other day after allegedly burglarizing a miniature golf course in his underwear. It was in his underwear. The Lee County Sheriff's Office said the incident happened at the Smuggler's Cove Adventure Golf location in Fort Myers Beach. 38-year-old Francisco Mayorga was allegedly wearing nothing but his underwear, and yet he was sweating when police located him. He was sweating because he knew he had done something wrong, I would imagine. Deputies also found broken decorations, a broken window, and a broken fire extinguisher. And yes, there is video of all of this. Surveillance footage appears to show and confirm that it was Mr. Mayorga who was damaging the facility in his underwear. Just out for another night on the town in Fort Myers Beach. All right. There is video. From the international file, the broken news, a 35-year-old man in Austria was arrested after a string of robberies, but he says that he should not face charges because he claimed that he was only serving as the getaway driver for his son and his son's best friend, who actually pulled off the heists. You know, don't charge me. It was my son. I was just the getaway driver. Not sure if that is a great defense. The two teenagers apparently would go into stores and gas stations armed with knives and or pistols. And the grown-up, supposedly the grown-up, would wait in the car outside. The trio robbed 7 locations before getting caught. But instead of taking responsibility, the adult in the room said he was nothing more than an accomplice. Why are you dragging your son into a situation like this? The judge asked. He said, the judge pointed out, I would do anything to keep my children out of trouble as much as possible. But the father eventually did confess to his involvement and will serve 8 years in prison. 8 years in prison. But he initially tried to slough off responsibility to his son and his son's best friend. Hey, I was just the getaway driver. Don't charge me. Had nothing to do with it. Nice. Not going to win any Father of the Year awards there, I don't think. Let's see here. This is kind of interesting. In merry old England, a pair of burglars with the same name are now sharing a cell after a brazen crime spree through the southwest portion of the country. The two men, both named Bernie McDonough, stole TVs, watches, jewelry, and cash. According to news reports, the detective on the case, not named Bernie McDonough. His name, Alan Hands, the Serious Organized and the Serious Organized Crime Team, as opposed to those non-serious organized crimes, I guess. That is the Serious Organized Crime Team. Anyway, Detective Alan Hands said both Bernie McDonoughs were of the opinion that they could go from house to house across the country and take what they liked when they liked without any repercussions. McDonough number one was charged with 3 counts of burglary, 1 count of attempted burglary, 1 count of going equipped for burglary, and driving without insurance. So they just tack that on for good measure, apparently. McDonough number two was charged with 2 counts of burglary, 1 count of attempted burglary, and 1 count of going equipped for burglary. But apparently he did have car insurance, so he escaped that charge. But yeah, now they are actually sharing a cell in jail. So that's kind of nice. You have all of the Bernie McDonoughs in one place. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the story of a cop in San Francisco who will go to extraordinary lengths. He is willing to do anything to ensure the safety of pedestrians in his city. Lieutenant Jonathan Ozel, O-Z-O-L, Lieutenant Jonathan Ozel, has taken to wearing an inflatable chicken costume while crossing a busy intersection in San Francisco in his district, in an effort to make drivers more aware of pedestrians. He's wearing a giant inflatable chicken costume, and I guess that evokes the age-old question, why did the chicken cross the road? To keep the other pedestrians safe in this case. Lieutenant Ozel has nabbed 8 drivers for failing to yield so far in this operation. He tells local news reporters, if you don't see someone in a giant chicken costume, then we really have a problem. If you can't notice someone who's dressed as a giant chicken, then you are probably not paying close enough attention. I would have to agree with that assessment. If you don't notice someone in a giant chicken costume crossing the road, then then you really should be paying closer attention. Lieutenant Ozel says, one more person that yields to pedestrians, that is one more person that's safe. And that is why he is on his personal mission wearing his inflatable chicken outfit. Well, kudos to him for trying to keep people safe. Whatever it takes. I think we need to call up the police here and see, get Brian White on the line and see if we can be willing to wear a giant chicken outfit and cross the road to test, see if people are paying attention to pedestrians in our town. Whatever it takes. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Lance with OSU Extension. It's harvest season. Drivers will be sharing roads with combines and grain hauling vehicles. Please be alert, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this fall to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The average American argues with their in-laws about once a month, according to a new Newsweek poll. 31% say they fight most often over politics. 22% argue over lifestyle choices. And 21%, this is what I thought was most interesting from this study. 21% say that they argue with their in-laws over their partner. In other words, you're arguing with your spouse's parents about your spouse. That doesn't strike me as a very smart thing to do. I mean, really, think about it. You're not going to win that argument. So why even go there? But one in five apparently do. Related to this, a couple of other data points from the survey. When it comes time to spending time with their in-laws, 27% of Americans in the survey would not enjoy a weekend with their in-laws. And 33%, one-third, would refuse to take a vacation with their in-laws. Absolutely refuse. That'll cause an argument right there. But, and I thought this was kind of interesting, 10% said that they would actually be happier with their in-laws watching their kids, happier with their in-laws watching their kids over their own parents, 10% said. I thought was kind of interesting. But anyway, moving on, this actually is, I guess, a bit related, being that autumn is now officially here, today being the first full day of autumn. Even though the dog days are technically behind us, these are still some of the best days to spend with your dog. Maybe you'd rather spend some time with your dog than your in-laws. I don't know. Maybe exploring the great outdoors on a crisp fall day with your best friend, taking in the colors of the season. Then maybe hanging out around the campfire in the evening, just enjoying each other's company. I mean, doesn't that sound great? With your faithful dog by your side? Does life get any better than that? So with all of those fall road trips coming up, if you are thinking about taking Fido along, instead of your in-laws perhaps, if you're thinking about taking your dog along, we are joined this morning by Auto Trader Executive Editor Brian Moody with the do's and don'ts of traveling with your pet, along with some safety advice, essential accessories, some of the best vehicles for pet families. Brian, if your dog is anything like mine, all you have to do is open the car door. She's ready to jump in and go. So it may seem like there wouldn't be too much preparation involved. But you point out that doing a road trip is much different than just, you know, running out to get ice cream or whatever. And that you really actually have to plan ahead for anything more than just a quick ride in the car.
Yeah, you got to plan ahead. It's just like traveling with kids. In fact, it might be harder than traveling with kids, to be honest. One of the things to keep in mind is, what's the dog going to eat? How long is the trip? And how are you going to give the dog water? Dogs want water fairly frequently throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just you and your dog alone, just think about this one simple thing on a road trip. How will you use the bathroom?
Yeah.
That's worth asking. How will you eat? It's probably best to pack a lunch and go to one of those, state-maintained roadside stops, mm-hmm. rest areas along the way. But whatever the solution is, you have to plan it.
So that's just one of the, you know, the things that an example of, you know, an item that we may not necessarily think of.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things that we need to keep in mind when we're traveling with a pet, with a dog?
Keep in mind that they may be, dogs can get car sick. That's one thing to keep in mind. So mm-hmm. if you're going to be in twisty mountain roads, you might want to try that out first and see how they react. You might want to bring some of their favorite toys. You might want to bring a t-shirt of yours that you've already worn and put it with them so they feel more comfortable. You definitely want to make sure that they're harnessed into the car. They sell harnesses now that clip into the car's seatbelt system. It's not safe for the dog to be walking around free inside the car,
mm-hmm.
just like you wouldn't allow your child to do that for obvious reasons.
Right.
So those are some of the things to consider as you're going on a road trip, or even if you're just driving around town with your dog.
Yeah, such a great point, too. Again, you talk about being car sick and things like that. Again, if your dog is anything like mine and loves to go along, you know, as you're just tootling around town or whatever, that's one thing. But if you're going to be spending multiple hours in the car, that can be something entirely different for any number of reasons. And
right.
you mentioned some of the accessories that we want to take along as well. Anything else that we want to, you know, kind of put on that checklist?
Yeah, there's a lot of good accessories that you can buy now, either online or in pet stores, things like a collapsible water bowl. So that's a, would be like a travel water bowl for a dog, maybe even a small food dish. When you're using it, you just unfold it and it sits there next to them and they can, you know, drink or eat when they want.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're not using it, it folds flat and can fit in your purse, backpack, or glove box. That's something to invest in. Also, if the dog has to ride in the cargo area of your SUV or minivan, you might want to invest in a small fan. They have fans now that can be powered by a USB or by a power point in the cargo area, and that helps the air circulate in the back part of the car. Especially helpful for those vehicles that don't have heating and air conditioning vents in the very back part of the car.
Yeah. All some great advice to, you know, plan on if you are traveling with your pet. And with respect to those vehicles, obviously want to talk about some of the best cars, best vehicles for dogs. And again, that could be different depending on what kind of dog we're talking about.
Right. So if you have a small dog and you have a sedan, that's fine. It's probably going to work fine to be in the back seat and just ride like that. Even a medium-sized dog could probably make do with that. Once you get a bigger dog, you might want to consider something like an SUV, just so that it can accommodate them. And the hard thing is with large dogs is you really want a vehicle that sits low to the ground, but that doesn't really mean large SUVs. So you kind of have to balance. Maybe you need to buy a ramp. Because it's hard on the dog's joints to jump down from a high height down onto the ground every time you do that. So vehicles like the Nissan Armada and Toyota Sequoia are good ones. For medium-sized dogs, we recommend like the Subaru Outback is a good example. You know, it's still an SUV type of vehicle, but it doesn't sit so high off the ground and has a large cargo area. And also, I would invest in a soft crate for the back. That's a good way to transport your dog. In fact, some municipalities in some states require that a dog be in a crate as they're traveling down the road.
I've heard that you know, traveling with pets is increasingly something that manufacturers are keeping in mind when they kind of plan out the amenities and, you know, such of their vehicles, that this is one way that that family is going to be using those vehicles.
Yeah, for example, Jeep has a great soft crate that goes in the back of their cars. It fits perfectly. Volvo has this great kennel-type system that fits into the back cargo area of their vehicles. And Subaru has many accessories, many choices. Subaru is probably the one automaker that's the most committed to dog causes. They give a lot of money every year to pet rescues, and they actually require their dealerships to partner with a local pet rescue in the city where they build the dealership.
Really interesting stuff. It is definitely something that more and more people are doing. And so if you're thinking of taking your pet along with you on your next road trip, definitely some things that you want to keep in mind. Again, Auto Trader Executive Editor Brian Moody with us this morning. Where do we get more information, Brian?
For more information, you can go to Auto Trader. Specifically, if you type in this address, autotrader.com/best-cars, and you will see the article right there in front of you.
Brian, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the annual Medicare open enrollment period begins in just 3 weeks. We'll tell you what recipients need to know about changes to the program ahead of making those decisions for 2025. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.